This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Earth Matters, I'm Lee Chui Lin. A vegetable plot springs up near a disused tennis court. A filthy back lane gets turned into a mini playground for the neighbourhood. Here in the studio with me is Yasmin Raz of Eco Nights. She'll be talking about placemaking, the art of reclaiming public spaces for the community using sustainable means. And Susan Tam will be discussing one of Kuala Lumpur's early examples of the activity, the TTDI Edible Project, where the area's residents produce their own greens. Welcome to the show, ladies.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Yasmin, start us off. Can you explain what placemaking is about?
Placemaking sounds like a very fancy word, but actually what it is the use of interdisciplinary approaches to planning, designing and management of public spaces. It's a very popular concept used more in developed and Western countries right now, but there is a growth here you can see in Malaysia very prominently with some property developers, and most importantly with grassroots communities in the city centres.
So it's not just something that's limited to existing places, it's something that's also being applied to places that are being planned for creation?
Yes, it can be either or. It's, I think, take Detroit, for instance, and how bad the economy affected the population of the Detroit residents over there. And I think one of the blooming placemaking and brilliant examples of placemaking in Detroit you see right now is the growth of urban farms. Simply because I think in the economic downturn, at the end of the day, people need to eat. You need to look at food security. And despite the fact that most of them probably have automobile background, you put all those skills combined, people there didn't realize that there was a need to look at utilizing spaces to grow food. And now you have beautiful, beautiful edible gardens growing in the vicinity of Detroit. And then last check, they even have a simple barter system going on so that people can share the food produce among themselves. So it's a way forward. It's something cities who are aiming to be sustainable should think of as one area to advance in.
It seems that it began as a U.S. movement, you know, in the 1960s or so, and the example you cited there was also Detroit. How has it evolved, especially since it started being taken on by other countries such as Malaysia?
Evolve in what sense?
Has it changed in any way? You know, has the mission statement changed, or has the application changed, or is it kind of much the same?
Mission statement remains the same, but the kind of tools people use for placemaking has evolved. So in the case of Detroit, it's basically gardens. In Malaysia, you see a growth in edible and community-based gardens. But you're not limited to building gardens as well. You can use film, you can use art, theater as a tool simply. Look at New Orleans. And you would almost immediately associate jazz with the city. And that's how using the right tools can bring people together and foster more community togetherness.
What principles should a good placemaking project encompass?
Feedback from community. I don't think a placemaking would organically grow if community, whether individuals or groups, are not involved in it. And that transformation is very clear in the TTDI Edible Garden. It's people that move placemaking. At the end of the day, placemaking, or the act of it, or the art of it, it benefits people anyways. So what is the secret ingredient? Are individuals who see a common vision in their community and what they want.
When did this concept get introduced to the both of you? Was it something that you just kind of started doing and then realized, oh, okay, you can call it placemaking? Or did it begin from reading about placemaking and then thinking, how can I apply this?
I think placemaking is a new term for me to know, but it started from the premise of wanting to grow your own food for economic reasons, for philosophical reasons, for even an appreciation for the environment we're living in. So coming together with the TTDI sort of community, we sort of have a very loose, very interesting group of people who came together all wanting to try and grow food and, I think about reusing spaces that are really just discarded or for whatever value. So we got together, and I must say, I must thank also Eat Shoots Roots Shaolins for like planting the idea literally in a few of our heads. So Miriam and myself, Lyman, Nisha, Eunice, so we all kind of got together along with many, many other community sort of neighbors in TTDI and just designed the space and decided, okay, perhaps this is where we can start growing our food. We know what goes into the earth. We know what comes out. We know that we're in control of what we eat and what we put into our bodies.
How did you go about planning the garden, you know, deciding, okay, how many people can get involved here? How much space do you have? All those sorts of different things.
Okay. It literally grew organically, pun intended. But we started with a seed swapping session with would-be gardeners or old veteran gardeners coming to share tips on how to grow vegetables in small spaces. Like, I live in a condominium. I don't have room at all. I just use my balcony. Many people are very small gardens living in dense cities. So having condo dwellers, I think that's like a million over condominiums in the Klang Valley itself. So people who want to grow food find it a struggle. So we came together with that idea and then decided that perhaps there are some spaces within Taman Tun we could, you know, kind of use, working with the council, working with the Residents Association. And that's what we did. With some of them, with design and permaculture sort of background came into play. But most importantly, like I echo what Yasmin said, is ownership. You have to own this project, or you have to really want to be part of it and commit to it.
Were there other discussions about what to do with that empty space? I mean, whenever space opens up, as you point out, when you live in a dense city, I think whenever there's a new space, people just get really excited and they come up with, oh, we can have, you know, this and that. How did you decide, okay, you know, a vegetable garden, that's what this is going to be?
I suppose we were lucky to come together with other similar gardeners or garden-like sort of individuals. And having given this, I won't say given this opportunity, we did approach the council, and then we gave them our design. We discussed with them and we waited for their response. But I think a lot of us were getting itchy feet. So there was this plot literally next to, also coincidentally next to the office of Eco Knights, that was really quite awkward in an L shape. And we decided, look,
4 feet worth of lalang.
And there was 4 feet worth of lalang. And we decided that, okay, let's give this a try. We're learning from each other. We're learning how to compost. We're learning how to reuse waste. We're being smart about, you know, trying to control how we eat, what we eat. So there it began. There was no real sort of plan. I think it just came together because people's energies were more or less in the same place. Mm. So that was a good thing.
Yeah.
Yasmin, are you getting a number of requests for vegetable plots as well? Is this something that people seem to be kind of, you know, getting the hang of or getting into?
Yeah, ironically, yes. I think it all stemmed from early last year. I can't remember the name of the paper, but I contributed an article on basically the economics of community gardens. And although maybe for Malaysians in Klang Valley, we're not pushed to the brink of desperation yet, but community gardens are proven to help alleviate in situ food produce situations. So so because of that article, I actually got a few property developers on board, but they threw me a harder challenge. Like, many of the community gardens have the benefit of landed property, and ideally you want to do that on a landed area. So the latest project that I'm working right now is on a 28-floor condominium, where every three floors there's at least 800 square feet of garden space, and the owner of the condo insists that people who walk up from the apartment or condominium will be able to go pluck curry leaf or pluck some limau kasturi if they want.
Two chili buddies.
Yeah, and we're also, instead of going down and driving to buy if you only need so much, right? And but we added another feature, which is aquaponics, so that we're doing rearing soon hawk and all, so that I don't know if people at the end of the day will pick the fish and eat, but the idea is to provide this kind of areas for people to, I can get them started to appreciate what a community garden is.
Yes, and appreciate where food comes from, how difficult it is to grow, why climate change is such an important, boring, but important issue, why we have to look after spaces, soil, water resources, because of these very reasons. And having space constraints, like she said, like Yasmin mentioned, gets us creative. So I literally cut kai lan and all from my balcony, mm-hmm. and curry leaf and etc. But with the TTDI edible project, there are little sort of plots people can just experiment with themselves. It doesn't have to be huge productions, but something to supplement the grocery bill, something that fresh, that is fresh, that you can feed your family with, or you know, just help with coping with so-called GST and things like that. So it feels, I don't know, it feels very satisfying. I think that's,
you know, what I see in your garden sometimes, what? Like, oh dear, there's people who work the drain cleaners,
yes.
and then they take a break because it's shady in the garden,
yes.
and then they realize there's some fruits, and then they pluck, you know? And they, I mean, it's so beautiful to see that the garden is a free resource.
Yes.
Available
and socially,
resource.
It's kind of turned that space. We've had picnics there. We've had lots and lots of picnics there.
Children coming
through. We've got so many sort of like school projects wanting to come and replicate. And we've got other communities that have asked us how we did it. I mean, there was no real set plan, but we'll willingly share with places like in Mutiara Damansara. I had some questions, even in Sri Hartamas, because it's all very condo-built.
Last year, someone from some university came to researchers and wanted to get in touch with you guys. And then she was asking me questions like, what does it take to get communities empowered? I'm like, well, you really have to talk to the people there. I mean, if I have to boil it down to formulas and how this is done, it's quite hard because you're talking about human sentiments and a mindset shift, basically. I would think TTDI residents have an appreciation for gardens way, way different than other areas as well.
I'm speaking today with Yasmin Raz, founder of Eco Nights, and Susan Tam, member of the TTDI Edible Project. We're discussing regenerating public spaces. Up next, the role of local councils, and we find out more about the TTDI Edible Project. You are listening to Earth Matters today on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. In the studio with me today, Yasmin Raz, founder of Eco Nights, and Susan Tam, member of the TTDI Edible Project. They're both here because we're discussing how to regenerate public spaces, taking the TTDI Edible Project, in fact, as an example. Susan, you've talked about how, you know, it kind of all just came together, and it sounds like a really lovely neighborhood project. Were there any, you know, did you kind of have to start putting a system in place after all once the early planning came through? You know, so now if somebody new comes in and says, okay, so can I join this? How do I get started? You know, what would the explanation sound like?
Well, good you say that, because there is a very loose set of system or understanding among the core members that are around. We welcome people to come in and set up their own plots. We try and do every Saturday we'll try and do a garden meetup, whether it's just to do a bit of weeding, seed swapping, exchange of ideas, etc. What is tricky now, I think the garden is going through, a lot of the core members are like in transition themselves. They've kind of like gone abroad to do their own small holdings or set up their own gardening community. So we're really looking for people who want to kind of have some ownership towards that project. With a voluntary project like the TTDI Edible Project, it's always a commitment issue with time and resources. But we'll tell them to, you've got to be committed to coming to that space. That's why we encourage people literally down the road to come up. Of course, we welcome membership. We've got people like clicking on our Facebook page from Johor as far as Sarawak, but we don't turn them away because we encourage the gardening knowledge to be shared. You want to kind of inspire other communities to do it. But we also, because it's a physical project, people should in the neighbourhood should benefit and should have a sense of ownership towards it. That's why we encourage more neighbours to come on board if they want to.
From your perspective, when you first started this, what skills did you have to teach yourself? How did you get started, you know, as a community gardener?
I suppose skills to teach. I think you got a desire to want to grow your own food, then be very comfortable working in the sun, I think is one. Working in dirty soil and dealing with things like compost and understanding waste and not treating waste like it's a ew, icky, disgusting element, but it is part of the earth that we can harvest and we can turn it into fertilizer that we don't have to pay a single cent for. I think it's given me a whole new approach about upcycling. appreciating resources and minimizing sort of wastage. So have the heart and have the maybe stamina to work under the sun in the early mornings for a couple of hours, and I think you're set.
Mm-hmm. We've been talking, you know, about community participation, communicating with the neighborhood, and I assume that the people who are clicking on the Facebook page are likely people who don't just want to sort of voyeuristically enjoy the TTDI garden. That's a part of it. But I'm sure a big part of it is also, you know, wondering how they could kind of get things started on their own. And do you think this is something that that came about so easily because you happen to have the right neighborhood, the right people, the right time, or is it something that could kind of really pop up at any point?
I think we had the right type of people, but it's too sweeping to say that because you don't know, there are different, so diverse communities. But having said that, I've met people who have my background, who are retirees, who are young children, young students. So it doesn't matter. I think the desire to want to turn a space into something useful, whether it could be not necessarily growing food, but making it into a play space, workspace, something that's not, that is positive for the community. I think if you have that element, most communities would have. What we've brought back, I think, is what we've lost is the neighborhoodliness, if there's such a word. We've lost the ability to talk to our neighbours. Hmm.
To know who they are,
yes.
Even. Yeah.
So I think that's one of the many wonderful things that have come out from the project, is to be able to know who your neighbours are and to kind of have interaction. And it's literally, as we always say, it's across race, it's across religion, it's across ages. So I'd say most, if not all, communities can do it. It can only start with just two people having that conversation and then influencing others to do the same.
Mm-hmm. Yasmin, are you seeing, you know, you talked earlier about how you're getting a few more requests now for vegetable plots and things like that. For people who are thinking about starting something like the TTDI Edible Project, how would you suggest, if there are two people in, you know, in this big sort of area and they're thinking, okay, I think we could do something, how would you suggest they get started?
That's a really tough one. It's like almost like trying to sprinkle some magic and let people do something positive. I think if it's a member of a community, you need to be outside of your comfort zone and first get to know your community. And I think we've lost a little bit of that being in the urban environment. We go out and meet strangers in cafes, but we come back home, we don't even know our neighbor. So I think the common value that needs to be established when starting something like that is a shared vision. And I think for the TDDI Edible Garden, that shared vision is beautifully illustrated. You can see that outcome in the form of the garden. But there's also another way where a property developer would focus on placemaking as an advantage or as a new way to, I guess you can add value to your property, but secondarily, it's also, you know, anyone can build a property or a development area, but it takes a lot more to build an area where the community is tight. And I think a lot of property developers realize that it's not just about infrastructure, physical infrastructure, it's the softer part of it, what kind of quality of people are we attracting to our property? So when we did this with SBC, the philosophy was with the higher management. They saw this as, you know, it's worth investing in this because we also want to educate our buyers and try to trickle these values down to them. So I think bottom up it's happening, and top bottom also it's happening. And now how do we have that spark in communities, and TDI Edible Garden is a beautiful example, and the BU community, Banda community in 11 and 12 are trying to follow suit as well with some issues. You know, that I think one of the key issue is over here, this side, the community was not willing. They see it as dirty, they see it as messy, or like especially when you clear the soil and all that, but don't see the potential end result. So at the end of the day, I think the biggest factor is human factor. But like your garden, in Ateli Di Edible Garden, it's attracting even people from outside Taman Ton, especially the
Wat Salis. Yeah, I think people who are, expat communities one, but people who are also hungry for that sort of similar garden in their own spaces, and they come and then they ask, how do you do it? It's not been a smooth road. We've had resistance, we've had complaints, we've had a lot of, you know, uphill sort of battles per se, even within the members we've had to like discuss. And but overall, I think the general vision towards having the space reused for something purposeful, I hope it's there, and it will stay there, because you know we may move neighborhoods. But personally, I think what I hope something like TTDI Edible Project is will inspire sort of other neighborhoods to do the same.
The uncle across the street, sorry.
No, that
I was like excited to tell it.
Uncle Bohan.
The one who moved away.
Yeah, he's moved to Nila. Yeah. He's got his own durian orchard. But he was looking for like somewhere to put his trees, mango trees or all his plants.
Chili padi.
He's such a...
And before that, you know, the corner where the garden is, where the road sign is, it's just a dumping ground for... You know, La Malaysia, corner means they just throw rubbish there, mattress and whatever stuff that...
That magical fairies will pick up. Yes.
But when they started doing the garden, that gradually disappeared. And then the uncle started planting edible food.
He converted the litter area into... place where he put banana trees, chili padi. So he just needed a little bit of support network. So I think that's great for people who are a bit more less confident or need a bit of guidance. We're there, I mean, to just encourage you. It's okay to fail. It's okay to like kill plant babies. Excuse me. So I think that's worked out for many people like Uncle Borahan.
That's another topic.
How do you just take over a space, though? I mean, because we do see this sort of space. I mean, that street corner that you're describing, that's something that every Malaysian will have spotted at one time or another.
Yes.
You know, this street corner that for some reason people put chairs at or boxes, and you think, well, wouldn't it be a lot nicer if A, it was clean, or you know, B, we planted something. And how do you just start kind of reclaiming space? You had that empty lot, you know, what was the process of doing that?
We just went there and cut grass and did it, and then wait to see if there were repercussions. Actually, surprisingly, there wasn't. I mean, the residents association also, some members of it had also used the composting area. They've just come, they've brought people. We're next to the library, so a lot of students actually, you know, peek. And then the old tennis guys that play every Saturday morning loved all the papaya trees every day.
When it's dengue season, all papaya leaves are gone.
So, I don't know. We've not been chased out. I know I'm speaking on air here, but I think it's a risky thing. You're right. Tomorrow it could all be, you know, put. What is that?
I hope we haven't alerted anyone.
No, this is the point. This is the point where local authorities need to learn and understand why communities are doing this, because there's a lot of abandoned spaces here that could be put into better use. Number two, local authorities, I think the concept of placemaking is also new to local authorities. I mean, this is some of the more advanced concepts to building sustainable cities.
Yeah, but we're not painting like it's an us and them sort of thing. I think like MPSJ has some grants for communities to plant. I think MBPJ also did something in SS3 Herb Garden, and we're more than happy to, you know, have that conversation with the council. So just talk to us. We're on Facebook, you know.
Gardening is very peaceful anyway. I don't think there's any other motives behind it than just seeing things grow.
And feeding yourself, A big part of this, you know, importance being placed on ownership, I imagine, is partly for sustainability, so that you can keep it going. Because if nobody feels like they own it, then people can just come and go. How do you create a sustainable garden? You know, aside from having core members of a group being able to kind of hold the principles and hold the fort, how else? I mean, if we look at the example of the buildings earlier as well, what happens to the fish, you know, after a while? What happens to the building? What happens to the plants if nobody is either taking it, or if people are taking it but then not assisting with keeping it sustainable? I mean, people get irresponsible. How do you keep people on point?
I think it's just drilling constant education and awareness. Unfortunately, we're not anywhere at the point where we're saying we've had enough of knowledge on sustainability yet. Mm. And I think most people look at sustainability as the basic green and brown issues, recycling and maybe pollution and so forth. But really, for me, sustainability is about how you think and how you act. So it's a lot of constant hand-holding at this stage.
Yes, I agree. Lots of hand-holding.
Yeah.
But what is positive is that I see younger and younger members. Mm. I mean, some maybe 5 or 6 year old brought by their moms, but you bring them and you do the exposure and you hope. But in terms of keeping a project like this sustainable, I suppose this interview hopefully will help bring more people, or at least bring more people who want to spend a little bit more time with the project. Because like you say, succession planning is never easy. You hope you wanna kind of keep the project on for the next years, if not take it to another level. But constantly talking about it, constantly having that conversation with new people about it.
Yeah.
You know, people who are not in your whole converted circle. You got to go out of your own comfort zone in terms of communities to talk about it.
Two things, I hope local authorities would see this, because if we actually mold and facilitate this grassroots movement well, we're pretty much doing their job by greening more spaces and making people reduce their reliance on paid food. So I hope that in the very near future, like very soon, because your garden has been going for 2 years, that there should be some sort of dialogue with the communities, with the local authorities. Number two is with up-and-coming property developers to maybe look at more cohesive kind of placemaking. Mm. It's not just a piece of artwork or crafting something and put it there right smack in the middle and expect
one
people
bench
to sit. Yeah. You know, it's the totality of the environment, and I think it's a little bit more complicated. Mm. So are our designers well educated in sustainable design? Are architects, landscapers into it? So and if you look at that picture, definitely lots of education needs to be involved.
And finally, from both your perspectives, I'm hearing a lot of communication kind of having to go both ways, right? As you mentioned earlier, Yasmin, top, bottom, bottom, up, you know, so you have people trying to build buildings and communities to attract the right kind of people to come in to occupy those spaces. And on the other hand, you have community-led projects like the one in TTDI, where you're trying to persuade local councils to, well, look at this, you know, this can be replicated. How do you both see those conversations happening more easily and more naturally, so that hopefully you have, you know, a whole ecosystem of people all kind of wanting the same thing?
For me, with my current 6 edible gardens that I'm working at the Deck Suites, it's constant communication all the time. Not so much with the person who saw the vision, but with the other staff that's in the organization. So it's a lot of convincing. Mm. And you know, gardens grow. So when the longer they grow, the more you see the outcome. So when it requires a lot of patience, it requires a lot of holistic understanding of it. So like it or not, if we are in this for the long term in terms of sustainability and promoting something positive, that's our cause and calling, I guess, to continuously talk to more people, provide more understanding to the ground, and hopefully empower them at some point.
I think simplistically for me, if you make me think that way, I think it's also language, literally language, not just the green language, but speaking across to Malay-speaking communities, Chinese-speaking communities, because there's so much work done in Chinese-speaking communities. I think in SS2, there's like a great community going on composting, etc. We don't speak to them enough because we speak mainly in English or in Malay. That cross sort of, and that also happens across local governments. Local bodies like maybe DBKL and PPJ, maybe they are more comfortable in one language and we are not. So we need to come together and be whether we make ourselves understood. It is that medium that will hopefully binds the conversations together.
Thank you both very much for joining me today. I've been speaking with Yasmin Raz, founder of Eco Nights, and Susan Tam, member of the TTDI Edible Project. We've been discussing how to regenerate public spaces today on Earth Matters. You've been listening to The Bigger Picture on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.